todo el mundo.
But this was really
81. Welcome to the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. I'm your host, Stacey Lane Wilson, author of the Rock and Roll Nightmares book series and director of the documentary The Ventures, Stars on Guitars. This is your destination for all things rock, where the interviewees include musicians, authors, historians, filmmakers, and more. And now, on to the show. Today's guest is Colin Blunstone, lead singer of the iconic psychedelic rock band, The Zombies. He's here to discuss Hung Up on a Dream, the first ever feature-length documentary about the band, who not only had major hits with She's Not There and Time of the Season, but are also Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees. I can't wait to hear what he has to say about the documentary, which is out in theaters now, so let's get Colin on the line. Welcome to the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
I loved your documentary, Hung Up on a Dream, and it's such a great title. It hints at the band's aspirations, but also the harder times along the way. I think that the title really captures the essence of the zombie story as it's told in the documentary.
I think it does in a way, but I would say that Hung Up on a Dream is also a title of a song. And it's a favorite song of mine that the Zombies recorded on their album, Odyssey and Oracle, which was named by Rolling Stone as one of the top 100 albums of all times. That album and this song have a special place in zombie history. And it just happens to also fit the theme of this documentary as well. I think sort of the happy coincidence there that it's a wonderful song and that title, yeah, I think it really fits the documentary.
It sure does. And you mentioned Odyssey and Oracle. So there's a really funny story in the documentary about the misspelling. And I was wondering, like, in a weird way, do you think that kind of little mistake might actually have added to the album's charm and the lasting appeal?
I think it does in a way. It's things like that. It's quite interesting in that because the album has been a success, it adds to its charm, but there's a genuine spelling mistake in the name. If the album hadn't been a success, of course, the artist is called Terry Quirk. I remember very well. I went to school with him, actually. He would have been lambasted from east to west over a silly spelling mistake. And I blame it on our school because my spelling's very bad as well. I went to the same school as him. I wouldn't have even known there was a spelling mistake, to be absolutely honest. But I think it does add an extra charm to the album. Yeah.
Your director, Robert Schwartzman, is a huge fan of the Zombies, and he's quite a bit younger than your original fan base, for sure, but he's also a musician, so he knows his stuff. I'm wondering, like, how did you guys connect, and how do you think that his experience as a musician helped you guys tell your story?
I think that the original connection was between Robert and our management company, called The Rocks, and I think the Rocks were looking for an empathetic director who could be involved in this project. And Robert was looking for this kind of project as well, particularly, as you rightly say, he's not only a filmmaker, but he's a very successful musician as well. And so it was a meeting of minds, really. And that's originally how it came together. And then Robert had a Zoom meeting just like this with Rod Argent, the leader of the Zombies, and myself. And it was just obvious that it really worked between us. He understands how musicians think and how the music business works. And we just thought, this is the guy, this is the right person to make a documentary about the Zombies. And it's been an absolute joy working with him. He's very skilled, he's very articulate, and he's very empathetic as well. And he made what could be quite a difficult proceeding very easy for us.
I feel like we really ease into the story beautifully in the very beginning, that opening scene with you and Rod performing The Way I Feel Inside in a Church is just, it's really beautiful. Yeah. Now, what was the idea behind starting the documentary with that particular song and the setting?
Quite honestly, it's completely Robert's idea. And I can only go by memory here because it was 2 or 3 years ago that we did that. I'm not sure I fully understood what we were doing in this big church. It was like a cathedral. It was huge. I'm not sure I really understood what we were doing there. And then suddenly, he gets Rod to start playing this huge church organ and me to try and sing against, with no microphone, to sing against the church organ. I was thinking, this is going to be a challenging afternoon. This really is. I think it really works. Visually, it's very, very impressive. But I can't claim to have been involved in the decision to set that scene on. Really, I was like a duck can look really, or a swan can look really imperious above the water. And then legs are going like mad underneath. If you watch that scene, that's me. I'm trying to look as cool, calm, and collected as possible. And I haven't the slightest idea what's going on. So my legs underwater, my legs were going at 100 miles an hour.
I love that analogy, but I would never have guessed. You look like you're in your element and your voice is absolutely beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
After the Zombies broke up, you had this whole other life working in insurance, which I thought was like, why would you keep singing? But maybe it's the time, the era, the setting where it's like your parents say, you have to get a real job. Was that the thinking behind that?
There's an element of that. But when the Zombies finished, unfortunately, we were, especially the non-writers, people never fully understand this, but people who write the songs have a different income stream from publishing. But for the three guys who haven't written the songs, fully remunerated for their work. So without a good song, we could all pack up and go home. The song is so important. But the three non-writers had absolutely nothing. I had no money. I had to get a job. And I went on a round of interviews to try and get a job. And the first one that was offered to me, full I sin, was in a very busy insurance office. I had no idea. I had no real experience. I just walked in stone cold one afternoon. I had to start answering the phones on insurance. I didn't know anything about insurance, but I realized that if you don't learn how to bluff in the music industry, and I just had 3 years of it, you ain't going to last long in the music industry. And so I fitted in quite well in insurance because I'm a good bluffer. And I managed to convince most people that I knew what I was talking about, but I hadn't got a clue.
Wow. But you did release music later as Neil MacArthur. Was there a reason that you wanted to use like a pseudonym?
Nothing straightforward in my career, and there's a lot of it that I can't really explain that well. But very quickly, to all of our surprise, Time of the Season was a hit after the band had finished. So I'm answering these phones about insurance every 10 seconds as I'm not, it's really busy. And then people start calling me and saying, Time of the Season is going up the American charts. I absolutely couldn't believe it. I thought the band had finished. I thought the music business had finished with me. I couldn't understand what was happening. I think gradually the phone calls for me to go back into the music business outnumbered the phone calls I was getting from insurance. And so I had to quit the insurance job, which I was quite happy to do. I met with a very successful producer in the UK. He just recorded the early Cat Stevens hit records. I've never been sure if they were hits in America, but they were hits in the UK. His name was Mike Hurst. And he wanted me to re-record She's Not There, which to me was a slightly strange thing to want to do. And somewhere along the line, we decided we would change my name. And the name is very, I have nothing to do with it. I was going to be James MacArthur until sort of the day before the record was released. And they discovered there was a James MacArthur in Hawaii 5-0, an actor called James. You can't be James MacArthur. you're going to be Neil McCartney. For me, it was wonderful to get the opportunity to get back into the music business. And I didn't really feel I was in a strong enough position to say, why are we doing this? I don't understand. And so for a year, I was Neil McCartney. And I really didn't know when people said, Neil, I didn't know if it was a noun or a verb. But I never knew whether they were calling me by name or giving me an instruction. So that lasted for about a year. And Neil McArthur, I use him in the third party, his version of She's Not There was a top 30 single in the UK. And so it wasn't a hit over here. Unfortunately, another band called The Road had just re-recorded She's Not There and they got the hit. Not a big hit, but it was the hit. And so for a year, I was Neil McArthur. And then I was coming home from a party with Chris White, the original bass player in The Zombies. And he said, Colin, forget this Neil McArthur stuff. Come and record with me, Chris White, and Ron Argent, two founder members of The Zombies. We have a production company. Come and record with us under your real name. And let's start proper solo career. And that's what we did. My first solo album was really successful in the UK. And it had a very big hit single on it, but it wasn't a hit in America. But my career then had started and I was a solo artist and I've been recording as a solo artist since then, since 1970, 71. But again, it never really reached America, UK, Europe, the Far East. It's always intrigued me how you can have big hit records in one country and absolutely nothing in another. This is not just me, this is true for all artists.
Especially since you're singing in English, so it should have been well received in the U.S. But you never know. Maybe now with the documentary coming out here.
Absolutely. I live in hope. It's always been quite popular over here. And it's one of those little mysteries that although The Zombies got attention over here, as a solo artist, I never did. But in actual fact, there are countries where I've got attention in what I'm doing and The Zombies didn't. It's just one of those things. No one understands why. The important thing is to try and make good music, to find or write the best songs you can, record them to the best of your ability. And that's what we do. And the rest of it is a mystery. No one knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. You mentioned Hawaii Five-O, and actually my dad was the co-founder of The Ventures, who had a big hit with the Hawaii Five-O theme. I directed a documentary about The Ventures, and when I was watching yours, I noticed a lot of parallels between the bands. They also had a lot of trouble with touring schedules and record companies, and they were finally inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So I feel like a lot of those bands in the 60s, you were almost the guinea pigs of the rock. Yes. Do you feel that way?
That's absolutely the case, yeah. It was new. We were the first people in this new kind of music. And people were finding their way. Also, a lot of the managers at that time were convinced that bands had a lifespan of 3 or 4 years. And bless them, it's just the way their minds work. They wanted to make the most out of those 3 or 4 years that they possibly could, rather than thinking about careers. If they'd have tried to support artists in their careers, in the long run, they would have made more money for themselves than they did in the short run, being very cutthroat. And sometimes cutting corners. But people found that out over the next few years. By the 70s, I think people were aware that musicians could have lifetime careers and that it was in the manager's own best interest to try and develop those careers the best that they possibly could.
Yeah, I think that point is really brought home in the film, which will be educational, I think, to a lot of younger viewers or people who don't know a lot about the music business. So it's not only entertaining, but it's educational. And I love how it ends with the Zombies finally getting inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. After all the ups and downs, what did it mean to have your career celebrated in that very high profile way?
One of the wonderful things about it was so unexpected. Just to remember that we thought the band had finished in 1967. I thought that was it. So to be celebrated in that way in 2019, sort of it helped to solidify what we've been doing. We got that recognition from our peers in 2019. It was a magical, uplifting experience. And I would say it's the highlight of my career, really. To be on a stage in front of 17,000, mostly of your peers, is mostly music business people, certainly the ones you can see at the front. It's all the good and the great of the music industry in the front where you can see. And to be performing in a situation like that, it's wonderful. It's magical.
And you have so many people in the documentary, interviewees celebrating your music. That's really got to feel good. Now, were you privy to those interviews while they were making the film, or did you get to see them after the fact, after it was all edited in?
No, I saw it after. Definitely after. I found it watching it for the first time. It was very emotional, I think. I thought, having seen it once, I would never see it again. I felt 10 years old and out of the cinema. I mean, we watched a 60-year career put together in a wonderful way in an hour and a half. It's emotional, draining, and uplifting as well. But you come out exhausted, I felt. But since then, I have watched it again, and I've calmed down a little bit, and I managed to watch it perhaps from a little bit of a distance and to enjoy it more as people will enjoy it in a cinema. And it's a wonderful piece of work.
Oh, yes. Everyone can see it now. In fact, here in Las Vegas, where I live, we're showing it at the Beverly Theater, and it's all over the nation, and people will be able to stream it soon. So thank you so much for being here, Colin, to tell us all about your wonderful documentary.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I've really enjoyed it. It's been great chatting to you. Thank you so much.
This concludes another episode of the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. Remember, there's a book series too. All the books are available in paperback, ebook, and audio via Amazon or the Rock and Roll Nightmares website. That's rockn-roll-nightmares.com. Our official theme song is She's Out for Blood by Fuzzbuster, founded by Lars Cabot. Thank you for listening.